From WXXI News, I'm Frank Sigelski, and this is Connections. Sitting in for Evan Dawson today, Frank Sigelski. We all know that reading is fundamental, but who's actually doing something about the literacy gap in our region? Today we're going to hear about a summer program, which is going to be more than a summer program, apparently, that is Allendale Columbia School and Rochester City School District School number 17, involving first and second graders, and it focuses on reading. And we have a couple guests today from the Allendale Columbia School to talk about the Summer LEAP program. That's the acronym, and we'll get that defined in a second. But first, let's introduce the head of school, and that's an interesting title for Mick Gee.
Yep.
Mickey, the title, head of school. I would normally think like dean or president or head of school is your title.
So I think it used to be headmaster.
Okay.
I think it's shifted a little bit in the independent school world. I mean, master just means teacher as well. So I think it used to be head teacher, and that's what it was in England where I'm originally from. But head of school seems to be a little bit more of an updated version, yeah. So I'm in charge of I oversee the entire school operations.
Okay, so no headmistress, headmaster, we didn't go that route, right?
I shifted it to head of school.
Fantastic. Okay. All right, and Amy Oliveri, you're a faculty member, and you're the assistant director of this. I think it's a fascinating summer program because of what it focuses on. But Amy, welcome, and tell us what you do at Allendale Columbia, and tell us a bit about the program.
Well, during the school year, I'm an art educator, and during the summer, I get to be the assistant director for the Summer LEAP program. As you said, it's a summer school for children at School 17 going into first and second grade, and it's just basically a way to help keep their levels of education going consistently through till they get to school in September.
Now, first of all, I want to know, does it just focus on reading, and what does LEAP stand for? Mick?
I don't think LEAP is an acronym for something. We're part of there is a consortium in town for summer learning, and there are other institutions, University of Rochester, Nazareth College, Geneseo College, MCC, Harley School has a program, Horizons, and we're part of a consortium that is interested in looking at this summer learning loss, particularly for students from low-income areas and families. And that's where the program started. It's been going. We're in our first year at Allendale Columbia. We started our program this year. But that's where it originated from. So we're part of a larger group. There's actually a lot of these programs going on in the city.
The Greater Rochester Summer Learning Association.
Correct.
Consortium.
Yes.
You remember that. And that's they were doing this, and now this is your first year doing it.
Yeah, the goal of the consortium is to increase the number of students involved in the program each year. So the goal is to increase, maybe start one or two new programs each year. This year, Allendale Columbia is a new program, and then Brockport has a program as well.
Okay. When I was looking at the program, what really jumped out in terms of we do a lot of programming on education, mm-hmm. and summer education and summer learning loss. It's if you're in education, if it's not on your radar, then you need to do some continuing education, I guess, right? Especially in the grade schools and lower grades. That it was an intensive reading curriculum with a 3-to-1 student-teacher ratio. Now that, you know, there aren't a lot of programs that focus on one thing, and I want to make sure I'm clear on that. Is it focusing on reading?
Well, I'll let Amy jump in. It's a broad-based program. I mean, it's got a couple of prongs. Reading and focusing on literacy and reading and mathematics are definitely like two of the goals of the program, because that's where we see a lot of the summer, you know, loss in students, and that the loss depends upon many circumstances, but typically it's at least a month or two of, you know, loss in those two areas. Each program then gets to focus on, you know, what it does best as a school. So although we concentrate on reading and mathematics in the morning, we have a whole enrichment program that Amy has helped to develop that involves music and other parts of school curriculum of a STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics program. Yeah. So, and Amy can talk more about it, but there is certainly a focus on reading and mathematics, but it's a fuller program than that.
And Amy, how many logistically 3-to-1 student teacher ratio students from school number 17, which is located? Just tell us again.
Around Jay and Orchard.
Okay, and many of these students who are either going into first or second grade are maybe a different language, maybe English is not their first language. Is that, am I to understand?
Correct.
Is that okay?
And we have a great, we have bilingual support. So Lindsay Brown is our bilingual specialist, and she's also our community liaison. So she's done a really wonderful job of developing a bilingual reading program for our students so that they're reading in both their native Spanish and also in English. And just looking at where they are and just trying to either keep them level or even raise them up one reading level for the summer.
Okay, the reason I ask about the reading in particular is because without that, I mean, you really can't even get to the math. I mean, mm-hmm. would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is on the, you know, top of everyone's mind in terms of early childhood education is reading readiness and reading at a grade appropriate level. And the phenomenon of students in certain schools and certain teachers, whatever, being passed along even though they really aren't reading at grade level. And it's really hard to, you know, it's hard to do anything without being able to read, write, speak. So that's why I ask about that. And especially with the 3-to-1 student-teacher ratio, there's a real opportunity.
Right.
So that is that the, I mean, if you've got a student who really is not reading that well at all, do you then tailor the program to focus on reading first?
Well, we're using Fountas and Pinnell for our reading assessment, and the way that works is it's sort of an alphabetized reading level. So each child gets A through Z, and we can tell sort of where their reading level is. And knowing those reading levels is really important for us because then we can create small reading groups, leveled reading groups, so they're reading with not only their peers, but their peers who are at the same level. So they're not reading in a group with a child who's reading at a fifth grade level. They're reading with someone who's reading right at their level.
Regardless of their grade level.
Correct.
I mean, in this case, we're talking about going into first or second grade, so nursery schoolers and first graders for this year.
Right. Okay. And then the benefit of having the 3-to-1 teacher ratio is that those three students are working with one teacher at a time, and they're really getting a lot of attention, and they're getting a lot of support with their reading and their literacy.
Of course, of course. Just a couple more logistics, and then we'll go to some big picture questions and comments. And you guys jump in if there's something that you need to share with our listeners, because we have a lot of folks in education that really cue into this show. But let me give the phone number out if you'd like to join the show today, Connections. The number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We would love to hear from you. Do they get a bus ride to Allendale Columbia campus? There and back, and food, and how many students are in it, and what do they have for lunch?
Can I just jump back to the reading
do.
Thing for 1 second? Because I think I just wanted to explain, you know, the 3-to-1 ratio. So we use it during the school year, and Allendale Columbia uses a program called it's from Columbia University Teachers College, called the Readers and Writers Workshop. And we use this with our students throughout the year. And what it essentially does is grade students by their reading level. And so they have a team of teachers. They're working in separate tables in reading level groups, and they're choosing actually the right level for them to read. And so there are always a team of teachers around. It's not a one teacher with 18 students kind of thing working on things. They're doing it individually. And so the program that Amy's describing is an extension of what we do during the year long. It's something that came out of Columbia University about 10 years ago, and it's an approach that we follow during the school. So we carry that out into the Summer Leap program as an extension of what we do during the year.
Right, and I think that's especially good. I'm glad you clarified that, because especially at that age, attention spans, if a first grader came in and was going to sit with, as lovely as you are, Amy, and I'm sure you're well qualified for everything that you do, you know, after a little while, they might want to still have the 3-to-1, you know, ratio, but maybe with a different teacher, maybe a different student. So that's what you're really describing there.
It's a team of teachers.
A team of teachers with an immersion-type environment tailored to each individual student's needs. But then there are things where they come together for lunch and field trips.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we can. I mean, Amy can jump in. She's the master of the logistics. But the program is supported by the Rochester City School District, and they support us particularly with transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So we pick up. Amy picks up in the morning at School 17. We bus the students up to Allendale Columbia, and then take them back at the nighttime as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. as the head of the school, I'm sure you have, well, I'm sure maybe you're both involved in this, you only have one summer. And, you know, obviously many teachers are doing other things, teaching elsewhere, working on their dissertations, whatever. And there are a lot of different things that you could do with the summer in terms of the school. I'm not talking about individually, but there are a lot of programs that involve helping less advantaged students, you know, whether they're in the city or somewhere else, and regardless of the topic. Is there something about, and this is your first year in the LEAP program, I assume there was something that had this program win out over some of the other options that you had at Allendale Columbia, and can you speak to those?
Mm-hmm. I think that as a head of school, one of the things I wanted to look at is the use of the campus. We're in, you know, in the States here, we have the, you know, teachers of 12 weeks off. The campus can be idle. It's a great resource for the city as well, and we need to be doing more with it. We do run our own summer camp. Next week, we have actually started on Thursday. We're going to run a camp for students from China. We have an international camp going on with domestic. And so there are other things going on the campus. I think this program, you know, stands out because of there is a need there. We know about summer learning loss, and we know particularly the challenges that the city school district is in right now. I think that, so, you know, we were sold on the idea of we're in a position where we can be part of a program that's going to change kids' lives. And the great thing about it is it's with School 17, and Dr. Spezio, who's the principal there, is a mover and a shaker in the city, has been for some time. He's super enthusiastic about the program, and we see it as a partnership. We don't see it as like, you know, any kind of charity we're helping out. We see it as a true partnership that starts with summer learning and then can continue to be a true private public kind of school partnership throughout the year.
The nice thing about that partnership as well is that our students will stay with us. So the students that we have now will carry on into next year, and they'll be second and third graders in our program next year. And we'll continue to add grade levels until we get up to eighth grade. So potentially our students that are with us now will still be with us when they're going into eighth grade. So we really do want to bridge them through their entire lower school and middle school experience.
And you know, that makes sense because it's not only summer learning loss, but from grade to grade, it's not necessarily the same phenomenon, but it's nice to have some continuity. And, you know, teachers change at their primary school, but if they've got some familiar faces that are sort of supplementing their learning, and when I say, with a capital L, because it's about life, because you're doing everything, field trips, and there's nothing you won't teach. I'm sure if you know the place settings aren't right, and somebody wants to know where the fork should go in a formal place setting, you would probably tell them, right? Mm-hmm. It's like that's not in the curriculum. It probably doesn't happen. And it's nice to know, I'm sure, for these young students, that there's some security there, that Amy will be there next year, or Mick will be there next year, or if not, someone that they recognize, and so you can kind of monitor. And I guess my question to that would be, as far as a responsibility to report back to, say, the parents of these children, how do you coordinate that with the city school district if there is an issue, either positive or negative?
I think that we've had great contact with parents. We've had home visits with the families, and we do see the families first thing in the morning and then again in the afternoon when the students are picked up. If there's anything that we want to report back to the families, positive or negative, that's a great time to just sit down and have a conversation about their child. And I think having that face-to-face contact is so important for them to know that we know their child.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the face-to-face, especially this age group. I mean, I would imagine for a lot of parents, taking their first grader, putting them on a bus to the suburbs is, you know, it's worlds away. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be some trust there.
That's a great point. And actually, it's one of the, I think when we went into this program, we knew that we had to work hard with families at School 17 and with the principal and with the teachers there to make sure that they trusted us with their children. It is, as you say, we're not very far apart, but we can be a long way apart if that's not the part of the city that you live in. And so I think Amy and Nate and Lindsay and another Amy that have been the drivers of the program have put a lot, they did their homework. You know, they went, they visited families. We recruited for the program. You know, we had to recruit. We wanted to make sure parents bought into the idea for the whole program. But we had to, you know, make sure they trusted us with their kids. And so the home visits that these guys have done and working with the teachers at School 17, you know, to make sure that they trusted us with their kids, that they're going to get back in September, was a big part of the success of the program.
Yeah, and, okay, again, that's Mick...
G.
Let's put the letter G. Mick G is the head of the school, Allendale Columbia. Amy Oliveri is a faculty member and the assistant director of the Summer LEAP program. If you want to join the show, the number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. You were recruiting for the students, so you knew that the parents would buy into it, that they were committed. And what about the teachers at your end? Because I understand that this program has rejuvenated some teachers' love of teaching, mm-hmm. During the summer, no less. And I don't mean that as any – there's no hidden message there. It's like, you know, tell us about that. I mean, tell us what your teachers are getting out of this.
So I think that was one of – when we went into this, you know, I think that – you know, there's a lot of summer learning programs. The consortium is interested with quality, high quality summer learning. And so that's a real emphasis. And we wanted to bring the same quality of education experience for these students as we do throughout the year. And I, you know, personally think our teachers are top notch and the best experience for these kids. So when we went into this, we wondered how many of our own teachers might be on board. We figured that, you know, we might have a few teachers that would want to give up their summers to work on this. And then we thought we might have to recruit, you know, a number from outside. And actually, the response from our own teachers was overwhelming. So we have more teachers from Allendale Columbia School that want to be part of Summer LEAP than we actually had spaces for this year. And I think that's been a huge part of the program. It's been a growth opportunity for people like Amy to run a project, but it's also been a different experience with different group of students from different backgrounds and for our own teachers. So that's been a real highlight, I think. I don't know if Amy would agree, but I hope she would agree.
Go ahead.
I was talking with our teachers this morning just about some of their other experiences and what made them want to participate. And many of them did have experience working in city schools and in low-income areas in Hispanic populations. So I think that knowing that Allendale was going to create something similar made them sort of want to be a real part of that. And one of the teachers this morning said to me, I'm a better teacher because of this. She said, this program is changing the way that I teach and changing the way that I help children.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You know, I think any time that you get that close of an experience with someone from a different, and again, we're geographically, we're not talking about a different world, but, you know, socioeconomically, historically, all the other A-L-L-Y words you want to throw out there, it is worlds apart. And not just for the student and the parent of the student, the parents of the student, but for the teacher as well. And like anything, you can, if you've been teaching a number of years, I would imagine that there are days, some days are better than others. And after a while, maybe you forget why you went into it. But to see someone who maybe appreciates it more or maybe whatever it is, you're going to get a different experience, and that can only help. So, I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, has that been your personal experience, Amy? You've been teaching a few years, yes? No?
Definitely, yeah. It's just wonderful. I mean, my favorite part is in the morning, first thing when they get off the bus, you get hugs and hugs and hugs. And, you know, saying goodbye to them in the afternoon is the same. They're blowing kisses off the bus and they're, you know, saying they'll miss you and that they'll see you tomorrow. And even if it's Friday, they say, we'll see you tomorrow.
It's like, okay, you might not.
But just the amount of love that is within them and within the whole program. It's so nice to see.
Yeah. And knowing that it, you know, if you can help, the younger the person is, in terms of helping them with reading in particular, at least I think, it pays exponential benefits because it, you know, the more they can read in first grade, the more they can learn about everything in first grade and second grade. And you know, it's you know, there are many adults who don't have that advantage. Mm-hmm. And to nip that in the bud with even one student, you never know. That could be the student that discovers the cure for cancer. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But as a teacher, you remember why you went into the profession.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think also, I mean, our teachers are always looking to grow. And, you know, the teachers that think they've got it down are making a big mistake. You know, the longer I've been doing it, the more I think education is changing and you always want to grow personally as well. So I do think, as Amy said, it's been a great professional development piece for our teachers too. Mm-hmm. Different students, different environment, they're trying different techniques, they're working in a different way with a different community. So it's good for them too. It's been a real, you know, growth thing for them.
Okay, so beyond the, you know, sort of that teaching, you've got a lunch break and you've done some field trips. You have some field trips planned, and can you tell us a bit about those and how they tie in with the program?
Yeah, we're really trying to create community partnerships that the students can access even outside of the Summer Elite program. For example, last Friday we took them to the Lincoln Library, which has a toy library in the back, and our students were just through the roof playing with the toys there. But it's a wonderful resource for them because they can go back there with their families. Having dancers in from Stop the Violence Dance Alliance, which is a Garth Fagan program. Mm-hmm. Those students came in and taught a dance lesson to our students. And so just creating these community partnerships and connections with places within Rochester that they can access.
Yeah, wouldn't it be neat if a first or second grader, you know, the families, what do you guys want to do? It's a Saturday. Well, why don't we go to that Lincoln Library? I'm not going to imitate a first grader. I want to go to the Lincoln Library toy library, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how neat that be?
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. And so you look for those opportunities. Are there other ones that you've got your eye on in particular that –
This is our fifth week, and next week is our final and sixth week. So we're closing up the program. Some other field trips that we've taken were to the Rochester Public Market.
Mm-hmm.
Students actually did their own shopping for some produce to go along with some recipes that we had. And then once they came back to school, they did the cooking portion. So they prepared zucchini blueberry muffins, which were delicious. But it was a really nice tie-in with the curriculum, you know, using math, counting money, coming back into the kitchen and leveling off measuring cups and measuring amounts of flour and mixing. So it was a really great way for them to, they were definitely learning. They didn't know it, and they were having a fantastic time.
Right, and you've got an edible result. And,
right.
You know, I'm always curious as to what first and second graders are going to make.
Right.
You know, I know that in nursery school, at least in the 60s, applesauce was... If you went to nursery school, you made applesauce. Now, I don't know why, probably because of where we live in New York, and there are lots of apples to spare, I suppose, but zucchini muffin, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, fantastic. I'm going to give the number out again if you want to join the show, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We're going to just take a short break here, and then we'll come back. Again, our guest for this hour, Connections, we have Mick G. He is the head of school for Allendale Columbia. And Amy Oliveri, a faculty member and the assistant director of the Summer Leap program, which involves students going into first and second grade who go to Rochester City School District School number 17. We're going to explore more of that after this short break. I'm Frank Sigelski, and you are listening to Connections on WXXI AM, WXXI FM HD2 Rochester, and WEOS FM Geneva. This is Frank Sigelski. I'll be sitting in for Evan Dawson on the next Connections as we explore the brave, newer world of marketing and social media. Expert John Alhart joins us in studio to fill us in on this ever-changing field. It's not what your teenager may have taught you. It's social media for corporate America, all coming up Tuesday on Connections.
On the next Fresh Air, George Takei of Star Trek fame has a new documentary about his life. He was 5 when his family was sent to a Japanese-American internment camp during World War II.
There were tall sentry towers with machine guns pointed at us. When I made the night runs to the latrine, searchlights followed me.
Takei will also talk about coming out as gay at age 68. Join us.
and continuing on Connections. I'm Frank Sigelski, sitting in for Evan Dawson today, and we're going to follow up with our guests here from the Allendale Columbia School, talking about the Summer Leap program, which involves students from Rochester City School District School Number 17 who are going into first and second grade. It's a student-faculty ratio of 3-1. And it's going to be going, it's going to be continuing as a partnership, so to speak. And we're going to talk about that now. But again, if you want to join the show, 844-295-TALK, 844-8255. Okay, so this is the first year for this partnership with City School Number 17. And it involves the lowest grades, you know, chronologically. But it's going to continue. Amy said that that the summer program is ending in a week or two. But it's going to continue as a partnership. And you say Dr. Spezio of School 17 is a real mover and shaker in this area.
Yes.
So let's talk about moving and shaking and what you guys are doing to follow that shake into the traditional academic year and beyond.
So just on the summer program, so we started this year with rising first and second graders. And as Amy said, we'll keep those students next year. And then we'll add another two classes. So the program is going to grow. And eventually it will go right up to eighth grade, probably around 150 students. We're starting this year with 30 was the target, and then next year it'll be 60 as we add two more classes. So that program itself will grow, and the students will grow with the same teachers, hopefully, in the program. But I think what we didn't want it to be when we went in is a kind of one-hit wonder in the summer. So the program itself will grow, but we also saw an opportunity because we're working with one school in particular, and we're working with Dr. Ralph Spezio, who is famous in the city here for organizing partnerships and things like that. We thought it might be the start of something that we could work on together throughout the school year. So what could we do together as two schools, one in the city and one in the suburbs, that will be a meaningful experience for our students and together as we moved on? And Amy and her team have had some ideas and already started to explore some ideas, I think, of what we might do throughout the school year together.
What would those be?
I think one of the big ones is our parent groups. So we do have a parent group that meets every other week. It's a bilingual group. So they're meeting together and talking about issues that they have as parents. And that's facilitated by our community liaison, Lindsay Brown. And I think, again, you know, we've talked about trust a few times today, but I think trust is so important to build that trust and to let these parents know that we're here to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And just staying in contact with our families and also with our students, if they need tutoring help, if they need remedial reading help, what are ways that we can help get those resources to them during the school year?
So these parent groups, they continue with that trust concept, with the idea that maybe at some point a parent may bring something up that he or she might not otherwise in a one-hit wonder type of program.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just great for them to have a resource like that, to both have each other to depend on, but also, you know, the faculty from our school who are going into the community and doing these home visits and helping these families in ways that are, I think, just a little bit above and beyond.
Yeah, and as, you know, I see that, you know, the expression, teach a person to give a person a fish, they eat that day, teach them to fish, you know, they eat forever.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like by creating resources, like for the first and second graders who have been to the Lincoln Library now or been to the public market, they can now fish there, if you will, to keep mm-hmm. the analogy going. And now throwing the parents into the mix, parents can work with each other. You made the connection for them,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to be there when they move on and do what they need to do to raise their children under, you know, with their common concerns. I mean, those things are happening and those things are good. And that was part of the plan, I guess, maybe?
Definitely. I mean, I don't even think it was something that we planned on. It's just something that has organically happened for our parent groups and for our families. They see each other every morning and every afternoon, dropping off and picking up their students. And I think that there's some connections that they've made that they'll probably carry on throughout the school year as well.
And will you be doing anything else during the school year in terms of, you know, tutoring? Will that continue, like on the mm-hmm. breaks, or is it more just working with the parents during the school year, or do you know yet?
I think we're open to a lot of different things. I think that you know, the tutoring and the parent program is one thing. I think I've had a few conversations with Dr. Spezio about are there projects that would, you know, groups of students from both schools could work on together, so that you know, they could be a, it could be a community service type project. There's a lot of urban renewal going on around the school. Could we get involved with that together? But so, you know, I'll put a plug in here for this. You know, we've had them for 6 weeks, and they will have them for 6 weeks. But there are a set of teachers there at School 17 that are working year round with these students. Is there something that we can do together, educating the two groups of teachers, that that might be a project that just broadens the base, so that there's a, you know, there's a bigger partnership involved there. Very early conversations, but you know, I think that there's a lot that we could work on together down the in the future.
I think our goal is to reach out to these groups and find out what's actually going to be helpful for them. Mm-hmm. So rather than saying we're going to do these three things, we actually are reaching out to the parents and saying, what is helpful to you? Is a resume building workshop helpful? Is a cooking class helpful? And then reaching out to the faculty members at School 17 and just saying, what's going to help you? Rather than sort of just saying, this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Here it is.
It seems so obvious, but not just in what we're talking about today, but find out what the other person needs rather than just, I don't want to say shoving something down their throat, but here's your summer program. We're volunteers. What do they need? And that's where you also learn things about yourself, because, again, talking about it's a separate world, even though geographically close, the concerns that parents of children in School 17 have are, you know, probably some are similar to the parents of the students who go to Allendale Columbia year-round, but I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, different concerns that might not be on the radar screen. And so I think that's, I mean, that great idea, and keep the ears open, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
Keep listening. Now, as you go forward, okay, so now let's say a year from now, we're going to be talking about you're going to have twice as many students in this program, and you'll have students who are a year to 2 years older and going forward. What, in terms of long range, any special considerations that that we need to know about, the listeners might want to know about, or people who maybe want to volunteer or whatever? I mean, this is a public radio. It's open to everyone. And, and so let's hear what you have in the future. Maybe someone will jump in.
So I think the goals of the GRSLA are to, you know, right now there's something like 580 students involved in the various programs that got it going on college campuses and other schools. I think the goal there is to have 1,000 students out. So that's a huge task, you know, to get 1,000 students from involved in the Summer Learning Project.
Okay, so that the Greater Rochester Summer Learning Association wants to have 1,000, or you guys want to have 1,000?
That's the consortium, and there are, you know, we're first year in there. You know, some other schools have been in there for a long time. Some other many programs have started in the last 2 or 3 years. University of Rochester, Nazareth have started programs. And I think so the consortium's got its goals to extend the program. We have our own goals, of course, for the program, too. And being a part of that, we'd like to grow ours to around 150 to build in more of those experiences that we think we're pretty good at, like teaching STEM classrooms, engineering kind of problem solving, and
science,
those kind
technology,
of
engineering, math.
Yep, we do. You know, we have a focus on international. You know, we really believe in students are going to go out into a global world, and we have a big global program initiative at the school. And I think good for everybody to be thinking like that, because the world is changing, and the world, certainly the world that first and second graders are going to go out into. When it's time to go out, it's going to be very different from it is now.
Yeah,
and that's,
I mean,
changing rapidly now.
Right. So if you had 8 grades worth of 30 students, that would be like 240 roughly at your school. I'm just curious, you know, as you do, or
so the, I think the target is around 150.
Okay.
Total in the program.
Divided by 7 years from now.
Yeah.
You'll stop with 8th grade.
Yeah, we'll stop. The actual program does stop at 8th grade.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe 7 years from now, someone who's in the first-year program could be in the 8th year.
They will be graduates of the program. There already are graduates of some of the other programs, and they often come back as mentors. They come back to work in the programs, and great graduates. You know, I've met some of those the graduates from other programs. So we'll have our own graduates that will come back and be mentors for this. They'll play a really important role, I think, in the strength of the program moving forward.
So, yeah, because they've been through it.
Yep.
I mean, that, yeah, obviously, that's amazing. So you also answer to the consortium, so to speak. Not answer to, but...
So we're part of it, and I sit on that board. There's a board, and I sit on that board. We're part of it, but the emphasis is on high-quality, independent summer programs. And so we're one of those independent summer programs. So each of the institutions that offers a program has a slightly different twist on it, and they add their own elements that they think are strengths. And so, but there, you know, the goal of the entire consortium is to, you know, attack summer learning loss and attack it for as many students as we can. But they're independent programs at each of the institutions.
Okay, and I assume you'll be staying with this LEAP model. That is, there's a playbook for the LEAP model. Something like that. You said.
We're writing it. Yeah, we've got one summer's worth of playbook, and we put that together. We sort of jumped into this around about January, and so it was all hands on deck creating a program and staffing the program. And Nate Merritt, who is not here, he's enjoying a little bit of break, but he has been he's the executive director of our program, getting that whole thing together in such a short period of time. Flush of energy, but we'll have longer now to plan, you know, the growth of the program over the next few years.
So how will it be different for the older students as you go forward? I mean, will there be any structural changes, or will it be sort of pick up, you know, they take the bus in, they have their lunch, they have their field trips, and they focus on reading and STEM type stuff? Or
I mean, I think it will be a similar schedule, but I think it will be also age appropriate and reading level appropriate for those students. I think we'll be doing some similar assessments just to see where they are, and giving them that individualized attention and differentiated instruction that they need, and just trying to help them with whatever it is that they need.
Yeah, again, whatever they need. And so we wait for them to respond to us. They might need more food at lunchtime or something.
Exactly.
And I mean, half kidding, because, you know, maybe they do. But teaching the cooking and stuff. Did you get any are you incorporating, or do you envision incorporating some of the other consortium type, you know, things that are going on in the other schools?
It's a great question, yeah. So we already do some of that with the Brockport has started a program which is being housed at the Harley School right now. And the students from that program come over to Allendale Columbia in the afternoons for the enrichment part of the program to do mm-hmm. music and physical education and those kinds of things. So I think there's plenty of scope for growth there, too, in terms of linking up with the other programs around the city.
So their expertise, you say, might be like music. I mean, if that's what they want to, you know.
I think, you know, so the Harley has a pool, and we have a joint athletic program with them, so there's a swimming option there. We have 34 acres of fields and a nature trail around our school, so there's something that we can do, you know, there. And then the colleges are also involved as well, so and they've got fabulous campuses and opportunities there. So I think that's something we could explore, too.
Yeah, the resources are there. All right, so why don't we go to the phones? We have Jane in the city. Jane, welcome to Connections. You're on the air.
Wonderful topic today. There is one thing I would want children to understand, and that is that, and I don't know how you could get this communicated to them, but we say the world is changing, but they also have a part in how it changes, and to assert themselves and help shape the world according to their values. We don't just have to take that the world is changing as though we're passive and have to accept the way others, more powerful maybe, are changing it. So I just wouldn't want the children to get the idea that they are just to conform and comply and take orders and not assert or dissent. Thank you very much.
Jane, that's an excellent point that we all can be reminded of, you know, that, you know, be the future that we want to see to teach them that they can make a difference. You're making a difference in their lives. Empower them so that they can teach the next generation to fish and that they have a say in what the world looks like as they move forward, and so are there ways that that you know, sort of bring that across to these, even to these young students?
I think that we have a mindfulness and character curriculum that we're also doing with our students to just help develop peer advocacy skills, develop their self-esteem, and just help them with their own self-regulation. And I think that that's one way that we can really help these students stand up and be individuals who our motto for our whole program is be the change.
Is that right?
So I think that really empowering them to be the change is really important.
Be the change. And so that Jane's comment is really appropriate. So would it be the change, you know, but think about it first, like the mindfulness piece?
When I think about being a global citizen, I think, you know, it's having empathy and understanding where other people are coming from in different parts of the world, in your own backyard and other parts of the world as well. So I think that we want to expose our students to that, to different points of view, and then they have a more colorful palette to make up their own mind when they move forward. But they are empowered. They are going to own it. And so I think it's really important that they, you know, are exposed to different views and different cultures early on so that they can, you know, when they are making decisions, they come at it with a sort of global empathy and understanding from different points of view.
Yeah, absolutely, and that goes back to the listening. Well, you're modeling good behavior. I mean, at the end of the day, teachers are role models.
Most of the time, we are. Yeah.
I just said role models. I didn't say good role models. Wow, you know, come on. I can start lobbing harder questions at you, Mick. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you are role models, and right. So to the extent that you're modeling positive behavior, I mean, that, you know, that's what children need. They need positive role models, whether it's in the home or at the school or on the bus. And so to the extent that they see you thinking through, you know, verbalizing your thinking, you know, maybe that's something that teachers are taught to do, you know, instead of just thinking, verbalize it so the students can see how you're thinking. Kind of like show your work in a math thing. I was really taken, though, the peer advocacy. Mm-hmm. It gets me to thinking, what might School 17 students need? Because, you know, I'm not there. But I would think that would be a huge one and should be mandatory. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that taking care of yourself and being assertive, how are first and second graders reacting to that type of concept?
I mean, it's been a great program so far. They read a book by Tay Diggs called Chocolate Me, and they're actually writing their own books now. So we have Creative Me and Precious Me and Careful Me and Funny Me. And so they're really taking those characteristics about themselves and feeling pride in themselves and then sharing that with their classroom. And it's great to go into the classroom and see them read their book aloud to their classmates and then to get compliments. So they're learning how to give and receive compliments from each other. They're also learning how to give and receive apologies.
Okay.
So.
All right. Fantastic. Let's go back to the phones. We have Bonnie in Rochester. Bonnie, welcome to Connections. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. One of the questions I had was I wondered the teachers that are in this summer program, to what extent is anything built in for dealing with professional development around racism, institutional racism, white privilege? I realize that not all of that's going to come out with students this young, but there are, you know, ways of developmentally, you know, dealing with that. But it's very important because, as far as I know, most education programs for teachers do not really, and it's different than diversity training. This is really in-depth stuff that I'm talking about, where people have to kind of examine their own, you know, feelings about racism and such. So I just wondered if that's part of the preparation or plan to be. It's pretty important, I think. So thank you.
Bonnie, is there before you go, is there a trade name? Like you say, it's not diversity training. Is there, maybe I missed it. Was there a...
Well, there really are, that's one of the issues, too. There, you know, you have to really know, I mean, maybe you're hinting at this, you really have to know the people doing this because they're not like, I don't know, on some book you read and say, call this one. I mean, that can happen sometimes, but there are groups here locally. I mean, people that are involved with this race and equity training, some of the subgroups, and there's one on education. You know, I'm presuming people hearing this are familiar with there's been a year, 2 year period program, and they're broken down in committees, and they're looking at racism from a whole different, you know, different points of view, from education, criminal justice, all that. And so, and I was participating in the education one, and so there are people on that, because this issue comes up all the time, as you can imagine. And so there are people who actually know good resources for dealing with the kind of racism education I'm talking about, and themselves, because I've done some of it, and know people. So that piece really is also very important, because you just can't pick somebody. You know, there are diversity programs. The state used to run one for public employees, which is, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it doesn't do enough.
Okay. Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate the call. Yeah, go ahead, Mitch.
No, I think it's an important topic, and I think it's one that's part of all education. It doesn't matter if it's independent or private or public. It's an important topic for everyone. You know, we have a very diverse student body. I think one of the misconceptions about independent schools is that it doesn't have a diverse student body, but we actually are more far more diverse than some city schools and some suburban schools. And, you know, we hear from our parents all the time about the topics like this and what are we doing, how do we teach it in the classroom. All I can say to you, it's important. We are constantly reviewing the best ways to tackle topics like this. We do it in our curriculum at the school, and I think, you know, I don't know if there's anything, you know, if there's something specific with the Summer Leap program coming out here, or if it's just about tackling topics like this in education in general, but it's an important topic that every school needs to tackle. And it's good to know also that there are good resources around, because I think one of the things is we're always trying to find the best professional opportunities for our teachers.
Yeah, fantastic. Amy, can you speak to that at all?
I know that Lindsay Brown has been very active in our community and taking our students to the race exhibit at the Rochester Museum and Science Center this past year, and having some great speakers in to talk about diversity in our school. So I think that both our students and our faculty have shared in some of those professional development opportunities.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, lifelong learners. You have to be a lifelong learner if you're going to be a teacher, because mm-hmm. Again, the world is changing so quickly, and it's not, I would imagine, it's not work for most teachers, that they love learning, and they had to stay in school long enough to be able to teach, and I think it's even required at some public schools that they be working on a degree. I mean, I don't know if that's still true, but do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's shifted in education is when we were in school, teachers knew the stuff, and we didn't know, and students didn't, and you had to go to the teacher to find out knowledge. And now that's changed, because knowledge is everywhere and students can access it, you know, anywhere. When I used to teach physics, I was the only one who really knew physics in the room. And then now it's not true, because kids are looking things up online. They're interested. And I think so the profession has changed a little bit. You know, we don't know everything, and we don't admit that we do that. But we have to constantly work it out. We're still necessary. I think teachers are still necessary. But how we work with students is actually changing all the time, pretty rapidly in our field.
Sure, sure. There's that trend towards getting the basic knowledge, especially in the older grades and after graduation, college, whatever, getting the basic knowledge from these other sources and then using the classroom time to refine, to discuss, to
sure.
collaborate.
Flipped classroom.
That's the expression. Now, I don't know, first and second graders, is there any flipping of the classroom? Are they doing research at home? Some students probably don't have resources at home, like computers hooked up to the internet, or?
I mean, I think the one thing that we've done is we're helping our students create a library in their homes. So every Friday, our students take home a book with a book plate in it with their name on it to add to their home library. So I think that our students, not only are they reading to us on the bus ride home, which is awesome, wow, sounding out words, but they're going home and they're reading to their families. They're reading to their siblings, and their siblings are reading those books. So at this point, that's all I could really ask for, is that they're taking that reading home and sharing it with their families.
Right. That's fantastic. And again, you know, the fact that it's a book that they can keep.
Right.
I mean, again, something that I would take for granted. I mean, I grew up with books all around me and subscriptions to National Geographic and encyclopedias that were, you know, made of pulp, you know. So is that – so that's something that you have to be cognizant of. Are there volunteer opportunities for folks beyond the parents of the children who are in the program? If someone wanted to get involved or donate a book, would they just call – would they call you, Mick, or what would they do? Or can they?
I'm looking at Amy here. I think that, you know, there are – as the program grows, we're going to need more people, staff-wise, and we'll be hiring people in the city. And we know one of the goals is we feel great about hiring our own teachers. We'd love to hire some teachers from School 17 in the future and work them together. There's a financial piece to all of this, you know, in terms of hiring and supporting the program. We were supported this year getting off the ground by the Rochester City School District, and we've got some kind of startup funding that will last for about a year and a half, 2 years. After that, the school is going to be responsible for raising money to support the program. So there's a place people can help right there. But but it's a fact of life. You know, these programs cost money, and the school is going to support it as much as it can. But we'll have to work on resource funding down the line as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Amy, what's the best part of this program as far as you're concerned as a teacher and as the assistant director of this program?
I think just seeing the students' faces as they're learning, and just they're so happy to come to us every day, and they're so excited to learn new things and to read new words. Just seeing their faces be so excited about learning is probably the best part for me.
Okay. Is there ever any pushback? I mean, do you ever get into debates with parents about anything in particular?
I think our families are so thrilled to have their students be a part of our program that they're just so excited to bring them to us every day and have them be a part of it.
Okay, and so then going forward this year, you'll have the parents, you know, have the parents groups and such. Anything else? We've got just a few seconds left. Anything else you want to say about the LEAP program, or should we just?
I mean, I just want to commend our parents. It's tough for them too. They have to get their kids to school early in the morning during the summer. They are a big part of the program. They've supported it and made it be successful. So, you know, if they're listening, I'd love to thank them and say thanks for sending your kids over.
Okay, fantastic. That's Mick G, head of Allendale Columbia School, Amy Oliveri, faculty member, assistant director of Summer LEAP. Thank you both for being here this hour. Connections.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the summer. On behalf of Roger Camber, our technical director, I'm Frank Sigelski, sitting in for Evan Dawson today, and you've been listening to Connections on WXXI AM, WXXI FM HD2 Rochester, and WEOS FM in Geneva.